So I'm pleased to share our experience with the geothermal VRF system that has been installed in Place de l'Escarpement in Quebec City. Place de l'Escarpement has been built in 2008-2009. It's not an old building, but already it has got quite a good recognition for energy efficiency in the province. The two recognitions we're most proud of is the Energia 2010. It is for new building, all categories in the province. And the Real Estate Award, the IDU 2010, that is given, that has been given to the building by the Association of Building Owners of the province. Our role at Polyénergie was, we are the energy efficiency division of the mechanical engineering firm responsible for the HVAC concept of the building. We were also responsible for the LEED certification process. The LEED certification process, the goal was to go to LEED Canada NC new construction goal at 42 points. And it is presently being reviewed by the CEBG. What has really driven the move to geothermal project in the province was the fact that the project was eligible for grants by the local electric utility program. The grants, the financial support for the grants is calculated by an energy simulation program that we run for the feature that we put in the building. And for that project, the energy reduction calculated by the simulation was 1.7 million kilowatt hour. It is calculated for all measure that has been applied to the building from HVAC to insulation. That was able to secure a grant of over $600,000 for the owner. He was very happy when he received the payment, and that amounts to about $2.46 per square foot of constructed building that includes office space and parking. The other simulation that has been done for the building was the EE4 simulation from Natural Resource Canada software, and that has been revised as required by a third party. With that simulation, we were able to get a 52% reduction at about 1.5 million kilowatt hour a year. So you can see that both simulation comes close to the same result. To achieve the energy use result that you will see further, other measures were of course included in the building. The high performance building envelope, there are all the roof surfaces have green roof for all the different level of the roof surface. The insulation and envelope ceiling was very important, and air intensity was checked with infrared camera during the first winter of operation. The glazing performance also has been optimized according to the building orientation, and two types of glazing has been installed in the building. Something that has proved a great help in energy management and was really very appreciated by the tenant, not only for HVAC but also for the lighting control, was the dynamic lighting and facade solar screen management. We can see this has been implemented on floor 4 to 7. For one of there's two tenants in the building. One has chosen that technology, the other has not. You can see clearly the effect of that that control technology in the four spaces. You see that when it becomes a little shaded on this part of the building, the screens are up. When it is intermediary, the screens are positioned at half level. And when it comes to full lighting exposure, full solar light exposure, the screens are down. Here, the tenants of the lower level, you see that people fail to raise their screen to improve lighting, natural lighting in the building. The tenant of the lower space now wants the same system that the guys has got for the upper level of the building. Also, there was advanced lighting control for the T-size lighting fixture installed throughout the building. The control architecture for the floor level 4 to 7 is very complete and is wireless, battery-less controls that integrate the light intensity detector inside the building and also the solar intensity detector that I'm wondering where it has gone because it's supposed to be there. So everything is tied together to give the best overall disponibility of the natural light inside the building and also to provide comfort not to have too much glare for the user in the building. Ah, there it is, the solar intensity detector pops in. So the dedicated outside air system on the first three floor, it's a usual system with heat recuperation and electric heating coil. On the other floor, they also wanted the humidification, so there is a heat pump on the circuit to provide heating or cooling or dehumidification, and it is the heating coil, the reheat coil here for the dehumidification is in fact a bypass from the rejected hot water to the source side of the heat pump. Both systems perform very well in the building. Another interesting feature in that building was the perimetric wall heating system that has been installed on every floor for every foot of perimeter space that was available. You are pleasing the architect because you get rid of the baseboard unit that are always misplaced in an office, and you are able to have good comfort like you can see here. We were able to get the wall temperature at 82 degrees Fahrenheit, the outside wall temperature. So with that, we are able to have no adverse condition from very cold weather that we got in Quebec City during the winter. On the parquet heating system, there is 12 water to air heat pumps that have been installed on the lower parquet levels. If everybody take a good attention, you'll see an error here that can only be made in Quebec because we love electric heat. This is installed right in the middle, in a mechanical room, right in the middle of the building, and you see the guys still install a small electric baseboard in the... It's tradition. So... Those are interesting features, but the measure that that was the greatest help to reach the energy cost goal that the owner gave us was the geothermal VRS system that present for that building a large integration of geothermal heat pumps. What do we find on the source side? We find 40 boreholes, each 500 feet deep. That is to serve a building that has 150,000 square feet of office building and total 250,000 feet with the parking. The main building HVAC system have been installed on each floor level. Here there's a little error. It's 96,000 BTU or 8-ton unit that you can see on the picture. We have as many as 6 or 7 such unit on a certain floor. Those units are very no noticeable noise, and they can be installed right in the middle of the building. The main HVAC system also have 40 refrigerant liquid gas separator, like Dermot has told you about previously. We choose the dedicated control system for the VRF systems supplier, and we use very simple controller for zoning purposes. We also have the HVAC control supervisor with 7 centralized controller, one for each floor, that has a BMS integration capabilities to the rest of the system in the building. The main HVAC system has 301 concealed type direct expansion unit from 0.5 to 4 tons. Here we have a look at close look at one of the unit. At the time of when the building was built, the option to get refrigerant to water unit was not available. So because we would have used that option instead of the dedicated heat pump that you've seen for the perimetric heating of the walls in the building. Here is the double heat recovery capability, but Dermot has already talked about that. At the time of the conception of the building, there was concern that when the systems were to be operating from the geothermal loop with a very low water temperature in the geothermal loop, there was concern that it could affect the performance of the unit in cooling mode. So there was a system designed to reduce the flow through the heat pump at those very low water temperature. Has now been a system to get rid of that problem has now been integrated in the heat pumps that we are still now using, that are an improvement from the one that has been installed at Place de l'Escarpement. Another interesting thing is that we'll see on the mechanical drawing, the main loop has one variable speed pump for each VRF heat pump. You remember that it was 8-ton heat pumps, and those small pumps have been we've been able to adjust them to use only between 350 and 425 watts per pumps to provide the necessary fluid to the heat exchanger of the heat pump. It has, when you calculate the whole energy usage of the pump, it is very low. Here we can see the main schematic. We will take it from the borehole, where you have the main mechanical room. In fact, it is two big pipes that goes all the way through the building. And here you can go to the borehole, you can go to the fluid cooler, or you can go to different heat pumps for the parkade unit. And then when you go to one level of office space, you get the VRF heat pumps and the perimetric heat pumps that we've seen previously. It's a very simple system, and the main loop is with 30% glycol in it. You can see what it ends up. So the two big pipes that run throughout the building. And here you find the borehole circulation heat pump. We have chosen the concept of multiple pumps, but for that building, those pumps are only 3 horsepower each. The fluid cooler pumps are also 3 horsepower each, and the fluid cooler have been installed on the side of the parkade to minimize the length of the pipes needed to connect them to the system. The advantage that we found during the operation of the VRF geothermal were energy efficiency and distributed capacity. That's very important. And also with that, we have the capability for tenants to start only their space when they come up outside the regular business hour. Very, very low noise level throughout the building. The small space requirement at each floor has permitted the architect to give us as less space as he can. So everything was a bit cramped, but maintenance was also possible to be done. The high diversity of simultaneous load was possible because we'll see a bit later from the result that we got that it is not typical of the result that we have got with regular heat pump system that we have deployed on many, many occasions in other buildings. So we have also high number of self-operating systems that provides reliability for the people inside. There was also, because those are one computer company and one insurance company, there was concern to be able to have a part of the HVAC connected to the generator, and the double heat recovery that has proved very efficient in the building. But there was also challenge. One of the main challenge was seen at the commissioning level during the open space. You know, when you have the possibility to install a lot of thermostat for zoning purposes and a lot of different units for zoning purposes, you can get into some problem in overreaching and installing too much control thermostat for large open zones. That was the case before commissioning, and after commissioning, those problems of simultaneous cooling and heating in a large area have been dealt with quite easily after that. Another important part that has the engineering team and the manufacturer team working together closely was to get the most comfort inside the occupied area. The challenge was to see that the dead band within the operating mode that you see here in cooling or in heating was not too influenced by the changeover dead band that was here that maybe in sometimes made the people inside the office feel a bit uncomfortable. So in the future project, we will work to get that dead band maybe a bit more adjustable for the system in order to more rapidly satisfy the usual problem that you have with HVAC system. We are able to get to deal with much of that with VRF system, but this changeover control has been improved in the new building that we are presently installing those units. But at the time, it was a lot of time, and it's important for you to know that this could be a challenge in some building. The other things, like we will see a bit later with the energy use, was the fact that there was two small data center in the building that with those 20-ton system were constantly rejecting heat in the main geothermal loop. So we will see the effect here.
Is that the good one?
Yes.
This is a snapshot that has been taken a week and a half ago of the condition in the building. We'll start with the outside air temperature that at the time was minus 19 or minus 3 Fahrenheit. The electric demand for the whole building was 620 amps. And we will go there to see that the return temperature towards the geothermal well was not that cold at 11.6 Celsius or 453 degrees Fahrenheit. So that is a condition that is supposed to provide us with very low fluid temperature, but we still get, and that was early in the morning when we were rebooting all the main VRF unit in the building. The VRF unit are not shown there. What we are shown here is the heat pumps that are working for the perimetric heating. After that, we go to the loop. On the loop, you'll see that first we can go to the fluid cooler. Then we can go to the geothermal well. For the geothermal well, you'll see that the entering temperature is 11.6 or 53 degrees. And because of the heat rejection during the summer, it comes up at 14.7 or 59 degrees F. So with that, you are able to see that we have been accumulating a lot of heat in the geothermal well during the summer season. And then we go back at 12.1 Celsius or 54 degrees Fahrenheit. At those levels, the heat COP of the unit is very high, probably over 5 easily. So that is an explanation for the low amps that we get for such a building that use only electricity. There's no other source of energy in that building. On that chart, I try to make my best to show you. So you see the electric demand. When the VRF unit comes up for the business hour, and here you see the glycol temperature that does not move a lot because, like I said, we had good reserve in the geothermal well. During the weekend, the VRF unit are there only to maintain the minimum temperature inside the building. And then you see on the Monday when we go back to full output at that minus 20 outside temperature, that we need about 800 kilowatt when we go back to full heating load. The outside temperature here, the outside temperature here, you see, goes from minus 5 Celsius or 23 degrees Fahrenheit to minus 20 Celsius or minus 5 degrees Fahrenheit. But you'll see that we are cycling those are the geothermal well pump. You see that we are cycling and that only at some times two of the pumps are needed. So that provide us with very low pumping energy. During the summer, this is a different story. During the summer, you'll see that we have all four pumps working when we have a high load, the high load demand for HVAC. And a bit later, you'll see that the heating, contrary to what has happened to every building that we've made in the province, the higher electric demand is during the summer, not during the winter for our condition. So important points to consider. Important points to consider during the installation for the HVAC contractor. The usual habits must change. They must be focused on refrigeration circuit, not ductwork. It was for us and for them the first project of this magnitude for many involved, and the learning curve that was important to consider for the contractor was the general apprenticeship needed for the over to understand the overall system, the high quality breathing on multiple connection that we have with all those refrigerant lines inside the building. And it was also important to correctly label refrigeration circuit component because, of course, during commissioning, we found some that some of them have been allocated to the wrong unit. Rigorous vacuum testing also is not always part of what the contractor do rightly. And accurate air 410 refrigerant charge was also a thing to be considered. The result, the goal of the, in Canada, you see, the standard building performance is around $3.12 a square foot. In Quebec, because we have cheap electricity, we always sometimes see higher the value than that. The company that the tenant that is on the upper floor was in a building that for the office part of the building he was paying $4.15 per square foot of energy. BOMA certified building performance is around 24 kilowatt hour a square foot or $2.55. So the total electrical bill for the building was $251,000 for 3.3 million kilowatt hour. That comes to about 7.5 cents a kilowatt hour. For that, we were able to reach for the overall building that include the indoor parking a total of 13.4 kilowatt hour a square foot or 45.7 thousand BTU. If we exclude the indoor parking, because we have taken during commissioning accurate management of the consumption, we get to 17.3 for the office part and 59.1 for the 59 kilo BTU per square foot. The specific for the lease portion, if you allocate the overall energy for all the building, for if you include parking, it's $1 a square foot. If you go for only the lease footage, it's $1.68. We have been also able to, during commissioning, to get a breakdown of the annual electricity consumption. And we've seen that the HVAC pumps, domestic hot water, comes up to 57% of the annual consumption of the building. The lighting 26%, and then the plug load at 17% for that usage. If you exclude the plug load that are not controlled, you get 83 cents specific cost for the overall building, or if you apply it only to the office space foot that are rented, you get $1.39. That is, like we said, very low compared to the usual value that we found in those kind of buildings. Like I said previously, this is not typical of the way that energy is consumed for all the buildings that we've made so far. It was really surprising for us, considering the climate and temperature in the Quebec City area. Yesterday when I left, it was minus 25 Celsius or minus 13 Fahrenheit. So you can see that the peak demand for electricity is during the summer month, even though we have a bit higher consumption for of energy during the winter months. As a conclusion, we've been involved in a design built with integrated conception and design built with the owner. So I can tell you that rigorous commissioning must be considered to reach a high satisfaction level from the user and obtain the low energy usage that the system is designed to provide because of the technology that is the relatively new for the installer. What can be perceived as an audacious project really can deliver high comfort and energy efficiency result, all the while ensuring a very high system reliability. I can tell you that there were a lot of resistance from going from the usual chiller arrangement to what has been installed at Place de l'Escarpement. And from the last picture, when we were in 2008 and talking about the area reserved for electric vehicle parking, like we were talking about new HVAC system, everybody was not, interested or closely associated with that. But now, in that building, the first charging station are being installed to serve electric cars. So thank you very much for your attention, and merci de votre présence. Merci.
Thank you very much. I would like to thank all the speakers. Please, any questions to any of the speakers? Please use the microphone.
Good morning. I have one question. In the Raj Seti with Seti & Associates, MEP Engineers out of Washington, D.C. In your designs, are you making any provisions for refrigerant leaks? I know you did mention the brazing is important in the connections, but are there any, to make sure that if there is any leak in any of the confined spaces, that there isn't any life safety issues?
Just to answer it from a design perspective, working with consultants across Canada, and maybe Claude wants to jump in here as well, we worked to different codes. In Canada, we have CSA B52 that clearly designates the allowed refrigerant charge per 1,000 cubic feet. We work towards that. You have ASHRAE 34 that talks about 25 pounds per 1,000 cubic feet. We would always look at spaces, look at total system refrigerant charge, and obviously work to those standards, and also look at other strategies like positively pressurizing the space so that if there is a leak, you're always basically removing the refrigerant from the space as quickly as possible. But I'll let the consultants maybe address that as well.
I think Dermot's pretty much covered it. In addition, in some scenarios in large mechanical rooms, we do have leak detection and alarm systems as well, but we work to the codes in general and look at the space, ventilating, pressurizing it efficiently. And that's how we're dealing with it.
Are you putting any refrigerant detection in plenums where these branch controllers are located?
Not typically in plenums, just in the mechanical rooms themselves where the condensing units are housed or large fan coils are housed.
After 2.5 years of operation, no leaks have been detected on the overall systems. And you know, it includes a lot of units. Most of that result, I think, is because of the attention that is taken to commission by the manufacturer team, the commission the units at startup.
Okay, thank you.
They are very rigorous.
Dan Kitzberg, West Consulting Group here in Chicago area. A lot of the discussion was pretty interesting. Dealt with items that were common or similar for water-to-air VRF as opposed to air-to-air VRF. And my question is, fundamentally, what's the difference? Why would you choose one or the other? Obviously, efficiency, I think, would be improved. But be more specific. How much better is it, and when would you use one, and when would you prefer to use the other?
Yeah. You've seen by the result that is very puzzling that all those geothermal wells may not be used to the most advantage. It was a lot of money to put in the project, but it could have been replaced by a smaller external heat source, whether an electric boiler. One electric boiler has been installed in case of the geothermal well would not be available to heat the building. But I think that you are right to say that a combination of air and a small unit that provides heat during the coldest winter month would be a solution that would be less expensive than the full geothermal tank.
I think to answer that question as well, I think in any projects we're involved in, it's sort of an economy of scale. If it's a building, we'll say, of 10,000 square feet, then air source would probably make sense because you don't need a backup boiler in some cases. In some cases, you do need some supplemental heat depending upon the design climate. So it's about incremental costs. As well, if you've got natural gas locally that's cheap, integrating that with a water cooler system makes a lot of sense. So we run the numbers both ways typically. But generally, if you're talking about a building in excess of 150,000 square feet, it tends to go down the water source path, typically. That's just a very rough number.
Yes. For that small bank unit, we have made with that kind of solution in mind.
Okay, Wayne Gardner from Washington, Canada. Just a quick question about on the DOAS systems, I think, Kenny, the ones you showed, there was a cooling or heating coil in the supplier for the DOAS system. Was it one coil?
It's a coil that with a three-way valve on the source side of the heat pump. You know, when you are doing a lot of cooling, you are rejecting heat to the source, and in order to prevent too cold air entering the building, because some of the rooms may not need a large cooling, do not have large cooling load. We just reheat it by the hot water that we are returning to the geothermal loop.
And is the same coil used for cooling itself? Same coil used for cooling?
No. It's a small hot water coil that has been installed after the heat pumps.
On the design approach there for the OPP systems, yeah, the ERVs were installed. At the time, it was our refrigerant to water heat exchanger, so we're generating hot water to a coil after the air to air heat exchanger in the ERV, and we could also use it for chilled water for cooling. But now they've actually, in the progression of the systems, you can tie a DX coil on your air side directly back in. There's an LEV kit that you can tie directly. So rather than generate hot water or chilled water, you just tie it in on the refrigeration side.
And both systems, you just have fluid coolers on the roof for rejecting heat in the summertime?
Yeah.
For us, first we reject to air, and when we are at the peak moment of the day, we kick in the geothermal well that has cooler water in it.
Okay. BP buildings?
Yeah, we just had fluid coolers. Some larger buildings where, again, geothermal it was a cost decision, but typically there were smaller buildings. It was a small fluid cooler on the roof and a backup condensing boiler.
Fred Holman, consulting engineer. easy question. What would you recommend for materials for the condenser water piping, and would you insulate this piping?
You mean for the geothermal loop?
Well, any of the water.
Who are represented to? Usually for the building that we have made in the past, we needed the insulation. But for that building, we didn't need it. What we are considering, the owner will build another similar building, and we'll tie it to the existing borehole in order to get more energy during the winter from the geothermal system and increase on the second building the size of the fluid cooler. So for the insulation, I think it's still, it is not, the data has shown that it was not needed, but if we go for the second phase of the project and add cooler temperature, maybe we will need it.
Eric Dickey, Delta Geothermal on the other side of Canada. And Patrick, just a question. You mentioned the idea of reducing your fluid flow in the cooling mode. Did you consider passive cooling at all?
Patrick. We're on the geothermal side?
Just the flow.
Okay. Passive, without running the compressor, just taking the cooler water and cooling with that.
The geothermal water directly for cooling?
Correct, yes.
In that project, we have tried it on other projects, but it was not it involves a lot of piping to get not that much high efficiency. So we are not doing it anymore for other for project now.
Okay, thanks.
Great. Any more questions? Well, thank you for attending. Please drop off your evaluations at the door. Have a good day.